but he thought, it must be pretty high. So he was walking around, and he saw all these sages meditating. He would try to speak to some of them, but they wouldn't reply, because they were in samadhi. So he was feeling a little frustrated. Plus, he couldn't see the Lord. So he was feeling more frustrated. But he kept chanting his mantra, and he became even more absorbed in his mantra. And finally, the sage Pipalayana, he appears in the 11th canto. Isn't it? He's one of the 9 Yogendras. Yes, in the 11th canto, Pipalayana Muni is there. So he spoke to Gopikumar and invited him, come and join us, learn meditation. And then he explained that we see the Lord always. All of us, we all see the Lord, and we all see him always. Now, bear in mind that in Indraloka, it was mainly Indra who was seeing the Lord. Others would see him when they were with Indra, other demigods. But when they had to go and do their duties, they wouldn't see the Lord. So it was mainly Indra who was seeing the Lord. But even then, sometimes the Lord would go away. Then in Mahaloka, the householder Brahman devotees, they would all see the Lord, but only when they were doing sacrifice. Not in the evening, not in the morning before they started the sacrifice, only when they were doing the sacrifice. Pipalayana told him, here, we all see the Lord always. So Gopikumar was looking around and thinking, really? Where? What is the idea? What's the secret? So then Pipalayana told him the secret. You have to learn meditation. Yes, so then he explained why. Why we focus on meditation. We are not so concerned about seeing the Lord with these eyes. That is not so good. We would rather see him with our minds or hearts. Mind and heart here is, these terms are synonymous. So he explains why. And try and catch this, because, you know, not that we would really agree entirely, but there's some very interesting points here, and I think it's going to come up in the next test. First of all, he said, the Lord reveals himself, meaning, reveals himself means in such a way that the devotee can appreciate that he is the Lord, only when the mind is thoroughly purified, or the heart is thoroughly purified. And then you see the Lord with your heart, with the eyes of the heart, or with the mind's eye, not with these eyes, but the internal eye. He said that these senses, all of the senses, including the eye, the sense of sight, and all the other external senses, they're all under the control of the mind. They are just like subordinate functions of the mind, really. Yes, they're under the control of the mind. And if the mind is not functioning, even if the senses are there, but they are useless. And the self will not perceive anything through them. And these are important points. Then he said, even if the Lord reveals himself to the eye of the devotee, he is seen by the power of the mind, or in terms of the condition of the heart. When the mind is, well, yeah, okay. He says, seeing the Lord in person is no guarantee of becoming blissful or, you know, having like real realization. As we see in the cases of people like Kamsa and Duryodhana. Well, that's a good point. They saw the Lord with these eyes. And they didn't become blissful. There was a lack of realization in their minds, in their hearts. So even though they saw him with these eyes, there was no, you know, like real experience, proper experience. And even some people like Madhu and Kaitaba and so many demons actually, they also saw the Lord with their eyes, but not only did they not become blissful, but they didn't lose their evil natures. So therefore, to see the Lord with the eyes is not really the point. And Pipalayana said that the Lord, in his pastimes, he allows things like this to happen. Like Kamsa and Duryodhana seeing the Lord with their eyes, but not becoming blissful. Rather, they became anxious and fearful. And people, demons like Madhu and Kaitaba, they saw the Lord, but they didn't lose their evil dispositions. Pipalayana says that the Lord allows things like this to happen just to demonstrate the glory of this meditation process and perceiving the Lord in that way, through meditation with the mind, within the mind, within the heart. Yes. How does that sound? Anyway, you can see he is a meditation fan. So he's a bit too much on that side. Although there's some nice points here at the same time. But we would not accept that this is like the ultimate understanding. Although, you know, there's something in it. And Pipalayana, he is certainly a very important transcendental person. So he said, when the mind is pacified, then it can fix on the Lord, and then you can become happy. And when you experience that happiness, none of your external senses can experience it. In other words, it is strictly internal. It is not just a sensory experience. It is something beyond the senses. It is mental, or it is within the heart. It is an internal experience. So then he concludes by saying that of the nine devotional processes, remembrance is the most important. Well, it's very important, but actually we accept hearing as being more important. Anyway, he is a meditation fan. He is particularly inspired by remembering the Lord. So this is his taste, really. Yes, of the nine devotional processes, remembrance, smaranam, is the main one, And one can only render devotional service when the mind is fixed like this. So, in this way, Pipalayana Rishi preaches to Gopakumar. So Gopakumar, he became attracted. He took up the meditation. Along with chanting his mantra, and sure enough, he saw the Lord in his meditation. But he found that when he would go deep into his meditation, he would forget about his chanting. So sometimes he would come out of his chanting, out of his meditation after a long time, and he would feel anxious that, oh, I haven't finished my chanting. So then he would express, he would say things like, oh, what a problem, what a disturbance. So Pipalayana and the four Kumars would ask him, what is wrong? And then they'd preach to him and get him to go back into meditation again. But like this, he found he wasn't entirely happy. And he found that he was remembering Vrindavan sometimes. One day, a strange but very imposing looking person with four heads came. And everyone, the four Kumars, who are like the senior people there in Tapaloka, the four Kumars, Pipalayana, and all the other big sages, they all offered their obeisances to this very impressive-looking, four-headed person. And Gopakumar asked the Kumars, who is this? They said, it's our father, Lord Brahma, from Satyaloka. It is even higher than this place. And there, the Lord of the universe is living in a thousand-headed form. What is the name of that form? The Mahapurusha. So we are meeting some of the same persons. Yes, so Gopakumar, he immediately started chanting his mantra. And sure enough, he went there very quickly. And there he saw the Supreme Lord reclining on Ananta. Lakshmi was massaging his feet. And Lord Brahma was there. And the Lord was very compassionately, very benevolently instructing Brahma in devotional service. And Lord Brahma was leaning forward and hearing the instructions, then stepping back and repeating the instructions, and then agreeing with the instructions. It was a very nice scene. Gopakumar fainted. Overwhelmed that at last this must be that supreme place. But Lakshmi picked him up and brought him to the side of the Lord. So he told his mind, he preached to his mind, give up this hankering for Vrindavan and Jagannath Puri. Just give it up and just stay here. So he stayed there for some time, watching Lord Brahma, worshipping the Lord, and the Lord was acting as a father to Lord Brahma. But sometimes the Lord left. Anyway, in the meantime, somehow Gopakumar, seeing the intimate connection between Lord Brahma and the Lord Mahapurusha, he developed the desire to have the same relationship. He desired to become Lord Brahma. So one day, just after one of the minor devastations. When these devastations happen, well, it is a bit of a mess. It's a bit of a mess. So, there was a large residue of foam left over from all the tossing and all the commotion of the previous devastation. Some large amount of foam was there. Somehow, Lord Brahma touched it, thinking that, well, just not thinking anything, really. And so he touched it. Soon as he touched it, that foam transformed into a terrible demon, massive demon, extremely powerful. Why? Because he embodied the terrible, destructive power of the ocean of devastation, the pralaya ocean, which is an important component in the devastations in the universe. So he embodied that power, the power to destroy, and Lord Brahma became scared. And he ran and escaped. So the Lord, the Mahapurusha, easily killed the demon, but Lord Brahma was too scared and wouldn't come back. So then the Mahapurusha appointed Gopakumar. You become Lord Brahma. So Gopakumar then arranged everything in the entire universe in a wonderful Vaishnav way. He sent devotees throughout the entire creation to preach devotional service. He made all the demigods, well, he appointed pure devotees to become all the demigods. In fact, it was so nice that devotees were coming from other universes, and he was sending them out on different missions in the universe for Krishna consciousness. And it was just, the whole universe was an overwhelming festival of devotional service. It was just wonderful. Despite everything, Gopakumar remained his simple cowherd boy self. Yes. He maintained that lifestyle. And what did he do? He kept chanting his mantra. He's really into his mantra by now. He is extremely into it because he's had so much experience from it. And as a result, his realization and his faith, has become extremely, powerfully strong. However, there were some problems. As Lord Brahma, he had a lot to do. So many things to do. He started drowning in the ocean of duties of a Lord Brahma. One day he heard that he was going to die after some time, and he got quite taken aback by this, and he started becoming a little fearful sometimes. And then he would chant his mantra and he would remember Vrindavan, and he would become disturbed in that way. But then when he served his father, the Lord, and when Goddess Lakshmi treated him very affectionately and consoled him like a mother, then he felt happy for some time. So in this way he had a mixed experience, or he was having a mixed experience in Satyaloka, Brahmaloka. So one day, as Lord Brahma in Brahmaloka, Satyaloka, Gopa Kumar was sitting there, and as was, you know, quite ordinary, all sorts of people were coming and going, visiting him, so many demigods and sages and saintly persons and mystics and all sorts. One day, a group of sages were there, and he just overheard them talking about someone from Earth who had attained impersonal liberation, and how wonderful that was, and how blissful it was, and how it was even higher than any pleasure in the material world, even the pleasures on Brahmaloka. So, when Gopa Kumar heard this, he talked to them, he asked them questions, and they answered his questions very well. He found himself becoming attracted to impersonal liberation. However, some of his close associates, different of the Vedic scriptures, they also heard this going on, this discussion, so they came over to take part. First of all, the goddesses of the Upanishads and other of the Shruti scriptures. Shruti means different parts of the four Vedas. Like, if you're familiar with the composition, the structure of the Vedas, they're divided up into Samhitas, Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads. Yeah. Actually, every Veda, there are four Vedas, and they're composed of Samhitas, but each Samhita has its Brahmana, Aranyaka, and Upanishad. They're grouped in groups of four like that, although the main element is the Samhita. So, all these different scriptures, the different subdivisions of the four Vedas, they started agreeing, saying, yes, this is very good. However, you can only attain liberation through cultivation of knowledge, jnana, which, of course, is something that Gopa Kumar is very weak in. There are also some of the Smriti Shastras who were agreeing. Smriti Shastras means they're the Dharma Shastras, Shastras like the Ayurveda and Dhanurveda. These are Dharma Shastras from the Smriti section, not actually within the four Vedas as such, as we know them. Some of the Puranas even some of the Pancharatras, these are Smriti, not Shruti. Of course, I don't know if we really want to go into the details of the differences between Shruti and Smriti, but basically Shruti means the four Vedas and their immediate corollaries. And Smriti means the Dharma Shastras, the Itihasas, the histories, Ramayana and Mahabharata, and the Puranas, and Pancharatras, the Tantras. These are Smriti Shastras. So some of them, who are more on the impersonal side, they were all agreeing, yes, yes, this is very good, but if you want it, they're addressing Gopa Kumar, if you want it, because they could see he was attracted, if you want it, you have to cultivate knowledge of Brahman. So then, some of the personified Puranas and Agamas, the Agamas, what are the Agamas? They are Vaishnav scriptures, Vaishnav Tantras, Vaishnav, they're like instruction manuals on different devotional activities, like Narada Pancharatra. That is a Vaishnav Tantra. So it is an Agama scripture. And Narada Pancharatra is explaining the process of deity worship. So they're instruction manuals, the Agamas. They're instruction manuals how to carry out different Vaishnav processes in very practical terms. So some of the Puranas and some of these Agamas, Vaishnav instructional type books, they said that actually this knowledge you're talking about is very hard to obtain, and this liberation is very hard to obtain, but it's easily achieved by devotional service. Now, bear in mind, I don't know if you noted at the beginning, but we said that in the end, this point is accepted. That liberation is easily achieved by devotional service, more easily than by simply cultivating knowledge. And even knowledge comes more easily if you render devotional service. This is the point which is going to come out at the end. Although, of course, we understand this is not the ultimate point in the Vedic scriptures. Anyway, so these scriptures made the point that if you try to cultivate this knowledge of Brahman independent of devotional service, it is almost impossible. It's practically impossible. But if you perform devotional service very correctly, then you can achieve liberation easily without taking any help from any other process. And for example, they quoted, here's a verse from Brihannaradiya Purana. Jivanti jantava sarve yata mataram asrita tata bhaktim samasritya sarva jivanti siddhaya. In the same way as all living beings live their bodies under the shelter of their mothers, so all perfections live under the complete shelter of devotional service. So, just try and understand what is being said here, or the way they are expressing themselves, in a very mild way. Actually, in an indirect way, they're saying that liberation exists under the shelter of devotional service. It's a mild statement. So, certain Shrutis and Smritis, certain parts of the Vedic scriptures and their corollaries, and certain of the Puranas and other Smriti Shastras, quietly agreed and nodded their heads. Their scriptures, which have statements like, this is from the Padma Purana, Apatyam dravinam dara hara karmyam haya gaja sukhani swarga moksho cha nadure hari bhaktita. Children, wealth, one's wife, precious necklaces, one's home, horses, elephants, and all kinds of happiness, plus the attainment of heaven and liberation. None of these are far away when devotional service to Lord Hari is present. So what is the point here? It's making it a little more clear. In other words, the idea is that certain scriptures, particularly the four Vedas, but even some of the Smriti Shastras, they're impersonal, or at least they're